RF tilts are not kind of one and zero binary. They don't just kind of block it all. They attenuate it, and the more impedance you add to your coax line by either using a toroid or a clamp on ferrite, the higher the impedance for the reflective common mode current, and the less trouble that you'll have. So you might find that it works for you up until a certain amount of power. Hopefully that power is your maximum capable power of 100 watts, but you know, you'll see in practice what happens. If you raise up your power and you change from one band to another, and you find that people are telling you that your microphone seems to be distorted or your computer reboots in the background, you'll know that you have to be a little bit more aggressive with RF choking.
Yeah, well, I'll know that in the next couple of days. But so far, I mean, I haven't seen waterfalls that look this good, you know, I don't think ever. And I'm talking about on 80, on 20. So we'll see. I need to do actual on-air tests to see if people can hear me, especially on 80 meters. I can hear them, but can they hear me? And the ridge only is capable of putting out 100 watts. I think it's closer to 90 on CW and maybe 60 or 70 on sideband. So we'll see, and I'll report back. Anyway, it's a lot of fun to experiment with antennas because you don't have much else in ham radio to experiment with except antennas. So that's where for me anyway, all the fun is. All right, Roy, thanks for your help. Oh, one thing. Those resistors I told you about, they're 47 ohms, not 47K. 47 ohms. And so now I would have to put them in series, right, to make a dummy load for the NFET?
Yes, you would have to put a lot of them in series.
And how do I calculate how much? What do I have to go up to, 3,000 ohms, you said?
Yeah, I'd say that it's probably more like 2,500. So it's just 2,500 divided by 47.
All right, and for an antenna that's has an impedance of close to 50 ohms, I would just need one resistor for a demi-load, correct?
Yes, if your balun was a 1-to-1 balun, or you didn't have a balun, then that would be fine. But because you have a 49-to-1 balun, you need to basically put about 54, 47 ohm resistors in series to get that 2,500 ohms of pure resistive impedance.
That I don't have. That would be a little ridiculous. All right. Well, I will. I don't even know if I'll need it. The real test of all of this stuff is what does it do on the air? Forget about the SWR. Forget about the specs. All that stuff is what does it do on the air? And I will know that by this time next week. So thanks, Roy. WTBZ.
You're welcome. By the way, I think when I last talked to you, you wanted to bring up the whole story of why people like to wind their ferrite toroids the way they do.
You mean whether they're on one side or two sides and going in the opposite direction?
Yeah.
Well, you're the scientist, so why is it better to wind, let's say, seven turns one way, go across the toroid to the other side, and reverse the winding and do like seven windings on the other side, but in the reverse direction.
Okay. There's a bunch of different reasons that you'll see on the internet. I tend to think one of the most important reasons why a lot of people do it is purely because it's aesthetically pleasing. It's very symmetrical in appearance, whereas if you just coil them around until the input and output coax that's wrapped around the toroid is next to each other, it looks rather clunky. But then there's a interesting reason that I don't think is much of a reason that people do it, is that if you are looping wire through a toroid, the shorter the wire you do that, the easier it is. And if you position the middle of the wire across the toroid and then individually coil clockwise one end of the wire and then counterclockwise the other one, you'll never have to deal with a length of wire that's greater than half the length of the wire that you're working with. So it tends to be a little bit easier to handle the wire, some people would say. The only real good legitimate reason is to lessen the chance of, say, capacitive coupling between the input and the output of the two coax cables. If you use the winding the way you see where it crosses over and such, you'll notice that the input and the output is 180 degrees from each other. They're as far as you can get. So there's the least amount of chance of capacitive coupling of the input and output coax. So I think that's the best reason to offer for that type of winding technique.
Now, I'm still confused. If you wind a toroid that way that you were just talking about, one side is clockwise, one side is counterclockwise, is that giving you a one-to-one balance?
Yes. As I mentioned before, if you only have two outputs, or an input and an output, however you want it, for a toroid, it's not a transformer. It's just a coil. So coils do not change impedances. Only transformers change impedances. And transformers are not exactly the same as a coil. They're similar. Usually there's two coils. There's a primary coil and a secondary coil. Just to confuse that, there's things called autotransformers in which you tap one of the windings in the middle. So we now have three contacts. And so you can change the impedance by using a single coiled wire on a toroid, but it again has to have three points of connection. So if you have a coil on a toroid and it only has two points of connection, it is not a transformer, it is simply a coil. Coils do not transform in heat. Sure, Wesley.
Kind of confused. We have a clockwise and counterclockwise. We're dealing with a singular coil. They impose an inductance in a common mode, but impose no inductance in a differential mode.
Yes, well, yes.
So now we have no inductance on the coil.
No, you have inductance for the common mode on the outer shield. You do not have inductance in the differential mode current occurring at the inner aspect of the shield and the center wire.
Okay, so in the case of the antenna, we have one wire, the other one is not clockwise. Is that what I should understand from the
No, it's one single wire. The question that we were discussing the other night is there any good reason why some people, when they're just RF choking, a common mode problem, some of them just coil it around in the same direction and use it. Other people do a little fancier thing, and they'll coil half of the coax as an RF choke counterclockwise and the other half clockwise. Is there any particular benefit for that, and what would it be? That was kind of what we were throwing about.
I'm sorry, I didn't listen to the conversation. So, thank you very
much. Okay. Yes, by the way, what I was telling Rich is there's a bunch of different reasons to be here. Now, I unfortunately think that the primary reason would be that it looks prettier. It just looks cleaner than if you just wrap it either clockwise or counterclockwise, and the two PLs, 259s, are sitting real close to each other. In the configuration, where I think it's called a split configuration, you have the coax cable going straight across one end to the other end of the loop, the toroid, and then half of it goes off in one direction and clockwise, the other half goes in the other direction and counterclockwise. And very often, if you do it right, you can have it be so that the two PL connectors are 180 degrees separated from each other. So it probably is not a good idea to have your choke have the two PL connectors each other. There's a possibility of coupling and the RF can kind of jump across and such. So that's the probably the best reason for why when people often want the toroid used as an RF choke, they use that split design.
Thank you very much for your comment.
Oh, the EDA yes, John.
So when you say one half is round clockwise and one half counterclockwise, you don't mean that the sense of the line change, just that you're starting from the middle and as you go at that start point, one end goes clockwise, one end goes
but this is kind of like when you explain it to people, they'll show you a picture of just a cable that's wound in the same direction from end to end with the two ends kind of bumping up against each other.
Oh, okay, somebody might have posted at least somebody thinks that you'll reverse the center of the line as you go the other way.
Okay, to anyone who gets the wrong impression, it's just within reference to the other part of the wire. That's all. There's nothing magical about winding clockwise versus winding counterclockwise. It sort of degenerates the arguments of which side of the tinfoil should you have up and which side should you have down.
Boy, for it to be a true one-to-one balance, does it need three or more wires coming off the toroid?
No, it doesn't need that because, as I mentioned, with real RF chokes, purely RF chokes, they are not transformers in any way, shape, or form. They are simply coils with a ferrite improving the inductance of the coil. That's all that they are. Now, you can build a transformer that is a one-to-one transformer. You would need a primary and a secondary. They would have the same number of windings, and they would not transform each other, but they would be a one-to-one transformer. An RF strip choke that is simply a bunch of ferrite planted together, or even a toroid where the coax is coiled around it, and that alone are not really transformers. They are just coils that choke the common mode by means of impedance in that outer aspect of the shield.
So what you're saying is to wind a true one-to-one balance, you need two separate wires, correct? And so each wire has two readings. So after you've done winding for the primary and the secondary, you have four wires coming off the toroid. Is that right?
In the case of a true one-to-one, you do not have to use coaxial cable. You just want to use a regular piece of wire. A lot of people have Teflon jacketed wire a little fancier, but all that you need is a single conductor. You wind it X number of winds in the primary. You wind the other one the same X number of winds as the secondary, and the two ends of the single conductor wire, one goes into the center and the other is the ground of one coax cable, and the other one goes into the center and the ground of the other coax cable. So you wouldn't really use a coax cable to do a one-to-one true transformer balance.
Yeah, no, I wasn't talking about using coax. I was talking about using wire, enameled wire or whatever kind of wire. To do a true one-to-one current, you need two separate lengths of wire, correct?
Yes, you need two separate lengths that can be wound the same number of times around the toroid.
Okay, does a one-to-one, is a one-to-one balance more effective than common mode than the winding with the coax?
Particularly, it sort of depends upon, what kind of core material and the windings and the ferrite and such, but you can accomplish the same exact RF choking with a non-transformer RF choke than you can with a one-to-one transformer. Yes, Wesley.
We have two different ways we can wind the winding up. So you can take two wires together and wind all of them. Or you can take each separate wire and one wire is winded on the right hand side of the ferrite. If you look at it from the front of it, and the other one is from the left hand side. Okay, the difference between those is the percentage of leakage inductance. So in sectional winding, the leakage inductance is higher than the sectional winding. Now also, voltage insulation is higher due to the separate winding.
As I'm aware, change the one-to-one aspects of the impedance, non-transformation. I said that you can arrange the two coils in any way that you would like to present you with a one-to-one impedance transformation. They might have different characteristics in dissipation, power handling capacity, and efficiency and such. But as far as the impedances, the same impedance that is inputted will be outputted, no matter how you arrange the primary and the secondary loops on the toroid.
So in sectional winding, when you have one winding on left, one winding on right, you have a leakage inductance, that is the percentage of leakage inductance is higher than the power handling is higher. Do you agree with that?
I'm not exactly sure what you're describing there, because it almost sounded like you were discussing the RF choke that has a split design, but I assume you're not. I assume you're talking about a primary and secondary that are wound on opposite sides of the toroid.
Strictly talking about a B-filler, but there are two ways of winding it. So if we have a section, then we have one on the left-hand side, one on the right-hand side. And if we have a B-filler winding, then we take two wires and wrap it around. Do you agree with that?
Yes. Well, like I said, there's a lot of different ways that you could arrange the two windings. The extreme cases are bifiler, where there are two pairs of wires traveling very close together, and then the other extreme is where you have the primary is wound on one side of the toroid and the secondary is wound on the opposite side.
So you think your winding leakage inductance is higher than B-filler winding? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's one of the characteristics of the different design. They will not change the impedance transformation, though.
Also, voltage insulation is higher due to the separate winding.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, winding wires together increases coupling and reduces the impedance. Do you agree with that?
You're not kind of using the transformer as an impedance device. You're using it to just transform. And so the only impedance I would be interested in is the input-output impedance. Usually, people will notice that there is a small capacitor at one point and a lot of power. And that's the kind of compensate for the inductive impedance, so that it will operate across a shorter frequency range.
So I was under the impression that if you have two wires together, or two wires on each side, then the wires are different.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So this myself
is. It depends what you're talking about when you say impedance, because we started this conversation not about transformers, but about RF chokes, where we're only dealing with impedance of the common mode aspect of the jacket or the coax. How the different windings affect the internal conductive impedance is up for discussion, but it's something that I haven't really involved myself in a great deal, except to know that that's why when people ask what is that capacitor doing there, it's to neutralize the inherent conductance of the coils power.
Okay, I'm going to listen to that.
If the coupling between the two windings is high, then inductance is small.
The windings of sectional windings are not close to each other compared to the B-filler windings. Do you agree with that?
I do not know how the positioning affects the inductive to certain with the nitty-gritty details. the standard design. I do not know, perhaps, you know, one of our little electrical engineers in the background can jump in and say if there's a significant difference in the inductance of a toroid wound one way versus the other that requires a significant difference in the parallel capacitors to kind of neutralize that aspect of some balance.
Okay. Do you think in closed fields, the distance between two windings changes in distance?
Again, I don't quite know what that even means. The two wires are circling around a ferrite with a magnetic field. They each have their own individual inductive reaction. I do not know how rearranging the two windings and introducing the capacitive coupling to the two windings will affect the inductive impedance. It might lessen it because we now have capacitance involved as well. So I don't really know.
Thank you very much for that. Also, thinking about parasitic subcapacitors, the capacitance between winding, the resistance to the magnetic losses, and the coupling factor. That's why I asked this question. Maybe somebody else would be able to add some light into it.
Okay, as always, our listeners are free to chime in and add to our education. There are a lot of complicated factors in electronics, especially in microwave frequencies. Inductors have profound capacitances. Capacitors have profound inductances. And resistors do a little bit of both as well. And everything couples with everything else. And this is in the RF pattern. So there's a lot of interaction that can be used to the design of any kind of electrical equipment. If there's anyone out there who thinks they can shine any further light on this subject, please feel free to chime in. Okay, I think the audience has spoken, or more accurately, the audience has decided not to speak. So I thank you, Rich, for your questions tonight. I thank you for participating in this weekly event, and you too, Wesley, as well.
Just last question. How am I coming out?
Right now, you're sounding fine.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's go back to Ryan, see how his signal sounds now. So, Ryan, if you're out there.
Yeah, how am I coming in now?
Much better. Audio's rather low, and there's only about 20% background noise, but I can understand you.
All right, let me try that. I'll be quick because I was down at Bethesda Fountain, Bethesda Terrace rather, over in the center of the park. I moved up to Belvedere Castle. Let me try to run it back. One of these bats already went after my antenna, but I'm going to get a dot in a second. I don't know if this is like even an answerable question, but I have three antennas, and they're all 5/8 waves, and existing that I tested, so one of those, the two of them are from Smiley antennas. One's a 5/8 wave, I guess it's about 10 inches long, bottom loaded. Let me drop for a second, make sure I'm still coming up.
I'm hearing you for the most part. There's a little bit of background noise that kind of goes up and down and up and down.
All right, well, this is a good chance to check. Let me switch out and try this other really 48 inch long antenna. Spot loaded. Let's see if it gives me a little better, and then I'll do it. And then I'll call it a night.
Okay, we'll give it a chance. We'll see what happens.
All right, K0BB, how am I coming in now?
Sounds significantly better.
Hi, well, I guess my question, this antenna is bottom loaded. It is a telescopic antenna, 48 inches tall, defining weight. Of course, a diamond center loaded, defining weight. Then I have a
not particularly. You should have approximately the same radiation pattern with a they're all basically, as far as I can figure out, mechanically short but loaded design. So they all should kind of give you the same aperture. They pretty much, since they're 5/8 wave, they should give you approximately the same takeoff angle. The difference would tend to be that the longer one would be a little bit more efficient than the shorter one, so the total output would be a little bit higher. Might not be discernible enough to pick up on your measuring equipment. So depending upon the design and how loading coils interact, theoretically, loading coils farther up should be more efficient because the highest current is antennas are closest to the unfortunately, you can't kind of definitively say a shorter antenna is going to be a shorter antenna with a center-loaded coil will give you a better output than a bottom-loaded antenna. A lot more variable when you have an antenna design that you have to factor in. Yeah, certainly, yeah. To be resident, you can electronically tune it to be 5/8. But the aperture,
the aperture of the infinitesimal dipole theoretically is exactly the same pretty much as the aperture of the mechanically resonant antenna. That's what the Dick Bayrestes used to repeatedly tell us all, and that's what the books sort of tell us all.
Well, my point is, all of the analogies where you see the 5-inch wave closer to the horizon and the quarter wave,
with loading coils in them?
Absolutely. A 5/8 wave has a terrible speed. It absolutely positively has to smash. And there are various ways to match it. And that's what we're talking about. Is so you can get this 5/8 wave antenna, which gives you the desired pattern with the radiation takeoff angle being closer to the horizon than the quarter wave. With a 50 ohm piece, and there's more than one way to spin that 50 ohm cat. That's the
difference. I have a stereo 5/8 wave head meter on my roof, and the loading coil is part of the impedance matching circuit that is right below the feed point of the antenna. So I don't have a loading coil on the antenna proper. At the base of the antenna is a impedance match here for the 5/8 wave, because as you mentioned, 5/8 waves do not have 50 ohm nominal impedances, and the radio is designed for 50 ohm. Yep, it's 20 feet. It's around kind of windy.
Yeah, so you said it's not 50 ohms. That's an understatement. It's something like 700 plus feet or 400 ohms.
Transformers.
ridiculously high.
So we've come to the conclusion if you got to have it too long or too short, it usually is best to have it too long.
Can I give you a practical example?
Certainly, Ed.
I I have an upstream equipment for me on my field, why did I choose this as my optimum and I own as a success plan? Because it's on the roof of a fairly high SUV. And I find anything with an action issue, the magma, tends to get knocked off the vehicle passing on the street.
Well, that certainly is a practical reason.
Yeah, having to stop and hold my antenna is still hanging from the coax and put it back together, supersedes any kind of hazard.
Yeah, I mean, some of them have designed that swivel for the antenna. Then there's that guy that we talked about for a couple of weeks, and then we stopped talking about it ever again, who has this little spiral hockey puck type of a compact, I think it's called a compact antenna. He has a whole line of them that sit really low to the car, where you're never going to knock that thing off.
Yeah, but I wonder what kind of hazard. By the way, I have another example. An airplane with an HF radio always uses the same antenna, which is a long wire from the top of the fuselage, right above the radio, to the top of the tail.
I have heard that explained to me before. I believe the compact antenna, we kind of came to a vague conclusion that it has a somewhat curious elliptical polarization angle, because it seems not to be 100% vertical, and it seems to deal with obstructions a little bit better than the standard vertical-oriented UHF and VHF antenna. So my guess would be that it's a little bit more elliptical than linear, so it's more complicated than a standard linear where either vertical or horizontal is one of the other. Yes. Someone mentioned a slinky antenna in the chat room. I haven't been able to really read through. There are people, we've had people on the air. One of them is the gentleman in the chat room, Alex82DU. He's been playing around with a slinky. It's an interesting thing to play around with. I don't think I would make it one of my standard tools. You know, it's kind of flaky. It's mostly inductive. And I'm sure it has a lot of loss to it, and coupling, and all kinds of dubious qualities. But it probably gets out to one degree or another.
It has a very specific, very long band.
Which is?
When you have to deal with a specific length, like a motel room or something. But if you're the swinging antenna, you just take it out, you stretch it out, and you hang it off the two things. And then, presumably, you have an antenna coupler to resonate it, and you will get out. How well? We'll see. But you will get out one way or another.
Okay, but I mean, theoretically, you could say the same thing about a long length of insulated wire.
You're assuming you have a shop with tools back. When you shove this into your carry-on, it's nothing like this.
Okay, I've never really played with flakies. I've part of my childhood, part of everyone's childhood from a certain age. I had a bunch of flakies, and if they were lucky enough to have a stairwell, they reenacted the commercial where the flaky is
is walking down the stairwell. But those were the old days. I'm not even sure exactly what those flinty metal was made of, how conductive they were. But, you know, again, I've read about it. I've seen YouTube where people use them. fine. We need to count the points. Otherwise, it's one of our planes. We want to make sure someone is aboard that. That's the other matter.
That's